We now are going to move to what everyone is so excited about waiting for this morning. An act to create consistency in the regulation of pesticides. How we're going to do this, I'm going to present a very short testimony, introduce the bill for the governor's office, and Representative Martin will conduct that part of the session. Representative Martin is going to do the positive. We will do five folks who are support of this legislation, and then I will do five folks that oppose this legislation, and then we'll go back to those who support it, and so on and so forth until we get to the end of the list. So with that, Representative, congratulations.
Thank you. You're right. You notice the good senator said that Representative Martin will do the five positives. He'll be doing the five negatives. Senator Davis, good morning.
Good morning, Representative Martin, members of the Joint Standing Committee on State and Local Government. I'm Paul Davis. I represent Senate District 4, which includes communities in Piscataquis, Penobscot, and Somerset counties. I am the sponsor of LD 1505, an act to create consistency in the regulation of pesticides.
Thank you.
This bill prohibits a municipality from adopting or continuing to enforce any ordinance or rule regarding the sale or use of pesticides. I submitted this bill upon the request of the governor's office, and I believe they have folks here that will be happy to answer technical questions. I know very little about pesticides. I have become somewhat of a master with a fly swatter, though. Suppose that is that fits into it. But other than that, I'll try to answer your questions, but I think you'll be sorely disappointed in my response.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Are there questions of committee members of the good senator? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for your presenting LD 1505.
Thank you, Representative.
The chair will now allow individuals who are proponents in favor of LD 1505 to please step forward. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on State and Local Government. I am Walt Whitcomb, Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, speaking in behalf of the administration in support of LD 1505, an act to create consistency in the regulations of pesticides. Pesticides are composed of a wide range of substances, including synthetic and organic compounds that are used together with other strategies to mitigate the effects of every manner of pest. They are used to control germs, insects, rodents, weeds, and a variety of other pests that threaten the health of life, of humans, crops, and the landscape. The greatest number of registered pesticide products are associated with the spaces in which we live and work to protect humans, plants, and pests, structures, and so forth. As the increasing movement of mankind and the shifting climate patterns has fostered this proliferation of invasive pests and the spread of diseases transmitted by ticks, mosquitoes, and other insects, effective means of controlling dangerous pests over the entire area of infestation has become of paramount importance. Pests have no regard for personal or governmental boundaries. At the same time, improper use of pesticides carries its own risks. If not used appropriately, pesticides can pose risks to humans, wildlife, and the environment. That is why pesticides are already regulated more than any other group of legal substances in this country. First of all, pesticides are intently scrutinized by the federal level by the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, before they're ever allowed in the marketplace. For instance, a 2016 study by CropLife International showed that the average cost of developing and conducting toxicity tests for a single new pesticide has risen to $286 million. Approximately 160,000 molecules must be evaluated to identify a single useful active ingredient. Research, development, and toxicity testing and federal registration for a pesticide now takes an average of 11.3 years to complete. Once EPA has determined that an active ingredient meets the minimum requirements for sale as a pesticide, then it sets about the task, only then, of determining how the product can and more importantly, cannot be used. Restrictions take the form of so-called a pesticide label, which is a legally binding set of instructions that accompany a new product. In some cases, EPA limits the use of a product to persons who are certified as competent to apply pesticides, passing an examination. The next tier of pesticide regulation occurs at the state level. Maine has one of the most nationally respected statewide regulatory programs that includes some of the most stringent some of the most stringent applicator licensing requirements in the country, a three-tier licensing program for companies offering pesticide application services, a requirement for applicator licensing whenever pesticides are used in any area where the public is allowed, applicator licensing for any food and eating establishment, a very broad licensing requirement for farmers, conventional and organic, that applies to over-the-counter products, a school integrated pest management rule, an indoor pesticide application rule, probably the most stringent pesticide drift rule in the country, a pesticide notification rule, a rule to protect water quality, a free, obsolete pesticide collection program, and continuously updated pesticide education programs. Maine has a national reputation for the most stringent set of pesticide regulations. The regulated community works within those boundaries, knowing that the Maine public is very cautious about pesticides. Even groups that oppose all uses of pesticides rate Maine highly for state policies on the use of integrated pest management, IPM, a science-based method for addressing pest problems resulting in the lowest possible risk. Maine is one of only seven states where local towns can attempt to regulate pesticides. And for good reason, 43 states have recognized that local regulation of pest control is impractical and unwieldy for commerce, struggles to separate fact from emotion, and potentially is even a risk to public health.
Commissioner.
Yes.
Excuse me. Sorry for interrupting you. You may not have been here, but we are doing a three-minute clock, so if you could wrap it up, that would be great.
Okay. Yeah. I think I would then skip to my summary comments and make the point that regulating in 496 incorporated communities has the potential for 496 sets of rules, creating an imposition on the public as well as those companies that are working in that arena. And in summary, I'll leave the committee with these thoughts. Pesticides are very heavily regulated. Having a haphazard regulated community creates hazards for both the public and the communities, that we have a very competent scientific board that works in those to establish those ordinances. Towns do not have the expertise or manpower to properly enforce public law. Staff of the Pesticide Control Board cannot fix local ordinances to meet vague local and specific science objectives, although all parties seem to think they can do the impossible. And in summary, I'd say the associated costs with a fragmented pesticide regulatory landscape impact all of our citizens and the commerce. It's a very scientific process, best left to people who are objective and still based on emotions, and certainly would be willing to meet with the committee to provide any additional information or to answer any questions if you choose to have any right now.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, I apologize for having to interrupt your testimony. Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Bryant?
Thank you, Representative. The first feeling of this kind of shocks me a little bit in the sense of local control. If we're now, by science, trying to take away the rights of the local municipalities to control pesticides or restrict them in some way, what is next on the list to start taking away from local control and their choice?
I guess the comment that that you made that we would take, we would use science to take away local control, which is what you just said. I want to use that as an opportunity to emphasize how very complex the use of pesticides is. They're both dangerous and yet of immense importance to the communities. Local towns, 498 of them, or cities, if the few that we have in this state, do not have staff to analyze the way that our pesticide control board and our scientists that are on that board, the products and their use. I understand emotion. I'm a participant in the town meeting process all my life and enjoy and believe in that process. But as you read in my testimony, the state has made the determination that inland fisheries and wildlife laws are best not enforced locally, that vehicle registration laws are something the state has decided there are minimum competencies in. I don't think you and I possess the ability to understand the complex scientific interaction of what happens with these products. And so we have a board that makes judgments, win, lose, or draw, based on the best information available. The bugs don't seem to understand the boundaries of towns or the products that we're controlling. Particularly with mosquitoes and other invasives coming in, there is a need to have an overarching concern to state level.
What I said was, I applauded you for using science, but I wasn't using science as the only reason for not allowing the towns to have their control. You kind of put that on one.
That was the point I was trying to make in my testimony as well, that there's a scientific basis for doing what we do in these products. There are just certain things that it takes a great deal of analysis and years of study to make judgments on the value. Which apparently is the point.
Representative B.B. Center.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that there's a Washington, D.C. organization that's been active in meetings and offering training. Is the training poor training?
The training is to create ordinances.
And are the ordinances bad?
Or that's my point.
The ordinances are bad.
We have 27 ordinances, and none of them are alike. In towns already in this town, with a potential of 475 more, based on whatever the community chooses to base them on. It's part of a national agenda. I didn't get to that part of my testimony. Maine is a state that is ripe for folks to kind of come in and use our municipal so-called home rule and other proposals. The point that I did articulate is we have some of the most intense pesticide regulations at the state level on the face of the earth. And then to have a group of well-meaning individuals who sit in judgment based on a group of people who come in with that don't believe in these things or don't believe in some of them. Now, maybe we believe in the flea collars for the dogs but not in spraying landscape. Products and picking and choosing pesticide policy, we just don't think is appropriate. And I think that it's not just an interference with commerce, but it's an interference potentially with health and safety.
Just a follow up. So you're saying that you say out of state advocacy groups are impacting Maine people and business using Maine law to champion their own agenda. So you're saying there are bad rules and bad ordinances that don't work, that are inappropriate and threaten the health of people?
These local ordinances are, frankly, very, very difficult for... Well, I suspect there are people here who may be able to describe in detail the impact on their businesses, but in terms of our role as a state entity, you were asked to come in. We, the staff that work in this independent, quasi-independent Maine Pesticide Control Board, they're housed under our department, but they make independent decisions and have a staff that provides analysis based on those decisions. And they're brought in, if somebody doesn't like Roundup, and there are national advocacy groups that don't like that product or the company that makes it or used to make it. And so there are groups that have that as a cause. Then you know, the department is, I think, unfortunately, or the staff of pesticide control were brought in to say, well, when might we use this, or where might we use it, or how do we do this and not that? I mean, how do we identify this pesticide we don't like, but not impact the Clorox under your sink, or the fly spray or the mosquito spray or other things? So it becomes a patchwork of value judgments instead of a uniform policy.
Thank you.
Representative Madigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
I tend to agree with you as far as the towns having expertise to administer these type of things. I've managed five towns as a town manager, all small towns, and certainly the towns I managed had no staff, no expertise in these areas. So when you mention there's 27 ordinances out there, I'm assuming they mostly large towns that may have the capability of providing some kind of technical expertise in their staff. And I guess my real question is, I guess I lost my train of thought there. Sorry, Commissioner.
Well, I think
my concern is that when these ordinances are developed, somebody must be checking them out to make sure they're in compliance with what regulations the state already has.
No, these are an attempt to override state regulations.
Okay.
And that is the conundrum that our staff, who are asked, and I dare say every instance or nearly every instance by the city of South Portland or other entities, you know, we have this idea of having more stringent pesticide rules. Come and help us make it right. How do you do that when, you know, they're placing a judgment on certain products or certain processes or certain activities? You know, we don't want things supplied to golf courses. Well, they're legal. Well, we don't want them to be legal. We want to have an ordinance to say they're illegal. Help us do that. Obviously we're public employees and do, you know, work for the public, but for a local community to say something is illegal when in fact it is both federally and state legal, how do you do that? Well, we've got 27 communities who have ventured down that space, some very large, South Portland and other entities, some very small, who are just as you describe, you know, one person is expected to do a lot of things.
Oh, shit. Thank you.
Senator DeChambeau.
Thank you. I want to follow up because that's exactly what I was thinking of the 27 communities, and I don't presume that they were the large communities. There were smaller ones. And you said in your testimony that if a community is talking about pesticides, they'll call someone from the department to give them an overview. But that's just it. Having done ordinances, the room is full of people that want you to pass that rule. So could you provide for us those 27 communities? I would like to see that have those ordinances. Do you have that available?
Well, of course, it's a constantly evolving list. I mean, I will. We'll ask the staff. I suspect one or two may be listening.
To
see if they have that. I mean, we have. Again, it's an attempt to override our regulatory authority. So we may or may not know all of them. We may or may not have been asked.
We may be hiding it from you.
I guess that's the nature of what you're describing here. I guess we were all in a community who was asked us repeatedly to weigh in on the discussion of the city of Augusta has asked us to weigh in. And it's very, with what? It's legal. Well, we don't want it to be. Well, that's your problem. I mean, I don't mean to be facetious in the discussion, but
Within the current law, I mean, if it's home rule, and they do it themselves the way they want to. And I agree with you. There are people who read one article and say, we want to outlaw this. And you've got seven people who are on ordinance committee, and they're listening to their town folk. But if you do have a list, your own secret list.
I wouldn't be a secret. Nothing we would have a secret. We don't do that. But I would, I mean, we'll, I guess I was in defense of folks saying we may not have them all. We're aware
That's
of that.
Quite all right.
Yeah, we'll try
just
to get that.
Gave me an idea.
I appreciate the request, and I'll try to get that.
Thank you.
I suspect somebody in the audience will be providing that list as they testify here shortly.
Could well be.
Representative Pickett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming and testifying today. Just kind of a follow-up to Representative Beebe Center's question on the ordinances and whether they were bad ordinances or whatever. I want to wrap my mind around that a little bit. I'm hearing you not necessarily saying they're bad ordinances. Would it be fair to say that all of these 27 different ordinances, they are different in some ways to meet the specific needs of those particular communities, but they mean well, but sometimes and most times they're counterproductive to what really is the overall problem of dealing with this issue? Would that be a correct assessment?
Well, I don't think I would put it that way at all. I mean, I think that we're very confident that the level of control we have at the state does the job. It does it exceedingly well. I mean, we caught here, and I know there's former members of the Pesticide Control Board and others who want a chance to speak. It's been a bumpy ride in pesticides in this state, and we got to a very high level of public engagement and a very high level of expertise in what is appropriate and inappropriate products. And now, and as much as we love town meeting formal government, you know, there's a desire to go and do more. And I wouldn't say that the ordinances are appropriate. I don't have all of them, so it'd be possible. But they're providing. They wouldn't be happening if somebody wasn't trying to go further than state law. I mean, you wouldn't have the ability to make them less restrictive.
And sir, I think what I was trying to say was that the ordinance was drafted from their point of view as meaning well. However. Mm-hmm. It really is counterproductive to what is best, which is the people that have the organization Correct. That can do the work. That's what I was trying to
yes,
say.
Yes, right.
Anyone else? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you for your attention. And we'll be available to provide further information. I guess we will be providing further information. Thank you.
Others who wish to testify? Are there legislators in the audience that wish to speak in favor of LD 1505. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning. Let me sign in, please. Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and members of the State and Local Committee. I am Jeff Timberlake. I represent District 75, Turner Leeds, and part of Livermore. I'm here to testify in favor of this bill today because you're going to hear a lot about emotions today. This bill has a lot to do with emotions, but in my world, is the reason I'm standing here before you today is because of just what's happening with this bill, with every town trying to put out its own pesticide rules and its own laws. Years ago, my grandfather told me, you have a choice, son. You can be part of the solution or part of the problem. And this state back in the early 2000s decided to pass a whole bunch of spray laws that was in the process of driving my 200-year-old family farm out of business. And so I ran for the legislature to come back and make them so that they were more amenable to us and the public and everybody around. And I think we did a good job. This is also about people's rights. People own their property, and they want to protect their children, their grandchildren, from ticks, from Lyme disease, from mosquito-borne diseases, and it's their right to spray it according to the law. And the law is the EPA law. Our State Board of Pesticide Control really does a fantastic job of regulating our laws here in the state of Maine. And local ordinances can found to be implemented by a very small group of people in a town. All of us here are part of, a lot of us are part of small towns here. And, you know, 25 or 30 people can make law for 2,000 or 3,000 people. And some of the local folks don't even know what's happening because for one reason or another, they wasn't paying attention and ordinances get passed. And I know that as someone who served on the selectmen, on the Board of Selectmen, as vice chair, and I know that our Board of Selectmen would never at any time have the ability to regulate an ordinance, even if we decided to pass the pesticide ordinance. And my conversation with the state is they're not in the position to enforce local ordinances, so it would have to be done locally, and I don't know who has the technology or the ability in any town to do that. I relate this to a little bit like the inspection laws in the state of Maine. I am a licensed inspection station. And what if my town came in and decided that we wanted to write our own inspection laws? And this is a lot like, you know, when you talk local control. There's some things that work for local control, but there's other things that violate people's rights. And this is one of those, when people pass these ordinances and you're going from one town to another or you're a small business within that community, we also happen to own a hardware store. And I would hate to think that our town came in and told our community that we could no longer sell a certain product, Roundup or what it may be, because or some insecticide that kills, deer ticks and so forth, and they couldn't go out and protect their children. This bill is a good bill. It's good law. We need to get people all on the same page. We have a great pesticide control board, a great EPA system out there that's been working. Our family sprays about 125 acres of organic apples. We're one of the larger organic growers around. So I'm not a big pesticide user. We are a big IPM user, integrated pest management. But within our orchard, we have organic, and we also have conventional integrated pest management. And you know, every single year on the same 50-acre parcel, both is raised, and our apples go out to be tested, and they come back with a zero chemical tolerance. So if stuff is applied by the law, applied right, it can be done safely without anybody being harmed, and everybody can do their thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative, for your testimony. Questions, committee members? Seeing none, I guess you're off the hook. Thank you again.
That's too easy.
Are there other legislators wishing to testify in support of LD 1505? Then you can't testify now. Are there other legislators who wish to testify in support? Anyone else wishing to testify in support of LD 1505? Go ahead, sir. Again, we need to remind the audience that we do have a 3-minute time clock. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on State and Local Government. My name is Michael Peasley. I'm a resident of Lisbon Falls, Technical Manager for Modern Pest Services, and on the Board of Directors of the New England Pest Management Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you this morning. As we heard from the Commissioner and from Representative Timberlake, over the past few years, the number of communities that have passed or are considering passing pesticide-related ordinance has increased substantially. Unfortunately, while I do believe these ordinances are well-intended, as we've already heard, I do not believe the people at the local level have the expertise and understanding necessary to appropriately regulate pesticides and their use. The Maine Board of Pesticide Control is made up of 7 members, each that are experts in various fields, including water quality, a medical expert, several applicator experts, as well as members of the public. The Board of Pesticide Control staff consists of 7 employees, including inspectors, licensing, certification, policy, and regulatory specialist, a water quality specialist, a manager of compliance, a director, and a toxicologist. Their budget in 2016 was a little over $3 million. That was to effectively manage all aspects of rules, regulations related to pesticide regulations, licensing, permitted uses, etc. The regulation of pesticides is a very complex proposition that involves cooperation with both federal and state agencies, with multiple experts in various fields. I believe local communities' perception is that this is in the best interest for them to regulate them, but I do not believe they have the expertise to do this. It should be left to the experts at the state and federal level. The burden on licensed professionals and businesses in Maine that use pesticides to comply with a plethora of varying ordinances from community to community is very time-consuming, confusing, and expensive. The goal of these ordinances seems to be to protect their residents from a perceived risk, when in reality they may achieve the exact opposite. Requiring businesses to comply with these ordinances will increase cost, which in turn will be passed onto the consumer. As cost increase, the likelihood of the consumer who is not knowledgeable, experienced, and qualified to use these materials increases that they will do this themselves instead of paying the cost of hiring a professional. I know my time's almost up. Lastly, we talk about Maine being open for business and communities being certified business-friendly. The reality is the current means of allowing individual communities to regulate pesticides promotes neither of those goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peasley, for your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Proponents, LD 1505. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and all members of the Joint Standing Committee on State and Local Government. My name is Ted Brayton, and I am the president of the New England Pest Management Association, which represents over 200 licensed pesticide applicators in the state of Maine, and I am here this morning to support LD 1505. I think the commissioner did a wonderful job explaining the registration product of pesticides on both the national and state level. I'd also like to highlight, in case someone didn't hear it, that all products are also subject to periodic reevaluation in order to be able to continue to keep their products registered both nationally and within the state of Maine. I'd like to note the Environmental Protection Agency was created in 1970 in response to the overabundance of confusing and often ineffective environmental protection laws created by states and local communities. Local communities simply lack the expertise and finances to set, regulate, and enforce pesticide use beyond policies which has been established at the federal and state levels. Underfunded and often uneducated with regard to pesticide use, an environment can be created where the vocal majority rules and pressuring local officials to legislate on fear instead of science. Due to the growth and expertise of the workers at the EPA and the State of Maine's Department of Agricultural, Conservation, and Forestry, we believe the time has come to leave the regulations over the use of pesticides to dedicated, full-time professionals. On behalf of over 200 association members in Maine, I ask that you agree with Governor LePage's attempt to maintain uniform pesticide regulations throughout the entire state of Maine and pass LD 1505.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Questions, committee members? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Others who wish to speak in favor of 1505, come on up, sir.
Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, members of the Joint Committee on State and Local Government. My name is Jesse O'Brien. I'm a member of the Ornamental Horticulture Council. I'm also a minority member of Down East Turf Farms in Kennebunk, Maine, and I live in Portland. We are in favor of LD 1505. Pesticides are an emotional and complex subject. Members of our industry, which include greenhouses, nurseries, landscapers, arborists, golf courses, garden centers, turf care operators, and Christmas tree growers care about the environment. We are as concerned as anyone on the overuse and misuse of pesticides, any type of pesticides. Many of us, including me, have participated in the many local community discussions concerning pesticides and ordinances. To be fair, I have been on the task force of the City of Portland in development of the pesticide ordinance, and I'm currently on the South Portland Pesticide Management Advisory Committee, acting as the arborist. What is most troubling to me is the absence of non-biased, authoritative information from state agencies in these discussions. We are licensed and regulated by the state. We get updated information and training from researchers of land-grant universities throughout New England and beyond. However, these same highly educated, dedicated researchers and regulators are seldom asked to, are not able to, or do not volunteer to share their knowledge and expertise at these meetings. LD 1505 creates consistency in the regulations of pesticide, which is important for our industries, our customers, and the public in general. Now, please understand, many of our members are organic gardeners using organic practices. We have no problem with using organics, and we try to incorporate them as best we can. Neither synthetics or organics are a panacea. Each one have their issues. What we do use is a system that was referred to earlier as integrated pest management, and we try to use the lowest toxic product to take care of the problem. Now, industries and organizations are for education. Groups that favor local ordinances are for education. This we all can agree on. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Representative Beebe, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You say that what's been most troubling to you is the absence of non-biased authoritative information from state agencies.
We look at the Board of Pesticide Control, land-grant universities, state UMaine, UMass, as people that call the balls and strikes.
Okay.
They don't necessarily. We don't always agree to what they say, but they call the balls and strikes, and they don't have a dog in the fight, and that's who we use for our information.
Other questions or comments? I guess you're off the hook, sir. Thank you very much. We are going to listen or hear one more proponent. Then we're going to be doing five opponents. One more proponent on LD 1505. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, members of the committee. My name is Bob Mann. I'm the agronomist for Lawn Dog Incorporated. We are a professional lawn care company in Portland. We have approximately a dozen employees and approximately 3,500 customers, residential customers in the Portland area. I'm here to support LD 1505. I can attest to the commissioner's statement that the pesticide regulatory and licensure process here in Maine is very rigorous. We are all very highly trained and continuously updated applicators. The snowballing municipal ordinances represent an existential threat to our businesses. We are going to follow all state local ordinances, regardless of whether we agree with them or not. The thing is that none of these ordinances remove the products from the marketplace. So in the absence of professional applicators, homeowners are simply going to go and buy these products themselves and apply them, and oftentimes apply them without regard for the label directions. To the extent that we find, say, for instance, lawn care products where they're not supposed to be in surface waters, we believe that's where these things come from. Off-target applications that are landing on impervious surfaces that are not cleaned up. That's something that we're very adamant about, following label directions, cleaning up after ourselves after applications. We ask for consistency in the regulatory arena. We would ask for whatever the EPA decides as far as what products they're going to license, the state then licensing them on top of that, and then the licensure process for applicators. We just ask for consistency so that we can have a business environment that is both science-based and also that we can anticipate in the future. This is the way it's done, and our current count is 46 states that do it in this manner. It works very, very well. It's a consistency between the state, local, and the applicators. So we would just ask that you join the other 46. In such a political climate is so divisive at the moment, finding 46 states that can agree on something is rather remarkable. Thank you very much for your time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you, sir. We are now going to be taking five opponents. Senator?
Thank you, Representative Martin. Are there legislators who wish to speak in opposition to this? Only in opposition. If you're in support or neither for nor against, you can get to speak a little later.
Good morning. It's nice to see colleagues from Judiciary and the Opiate Task Force here. Senator Davis, Representative Martin, distinguished members of the State and Local Government Committee, I'm Jay McCrite, representing Harpswell, West Bath, and part of Brunswick in the House. I'm here today to express my concern regarding LD 1505. Others will speak to the regulations the town of Harpswell has adopted and to the unique characteristics of the town. I should mention that I'm speaking mostly about Harpswell here, but I've been receiving opposition from West Bath as well. So speaking about the unique qualities of Harpswell, I want to stress the word unique. It's very hard to find a place in Maine that isn't beautiful in its own unique way. Our diversity in land, industry, and culture helps make our state the amazing place it is. Harpswell's culture and industry is very much about the ocean. We have over 200 miles of coastline, the longest of any town in Maine, and many Harpswell residents, at least 50%, make their living from the sea. They are lobstermen, clammers, wormers, aquaculturists, and seaweed harvesters. We have lobster trap makers, boat builders, marina workers, seafood restaurant owners and workers, seafood wholesalers and retailers, seascape artists and sculptors. The beauty of the area and the appeal of all things ocean, food, recreation, wildlife, draw many tourists who are vital to our economy. To preserve our ocean environment, knowing that what occurs on land will end up in the sea sooner or later, Harpswell has adopted municipal fertilizer and pesticide regulations. And like any responsible municipality, Harpswell provides information for residents about ways to manage landscapes, lawns, and gardens without using harmful pesticides and fertilizers that, when unabsorbed, will run off into the ocean and into wetlands. Algae blooms form and die, decreasing oxygen and increasing the acidity of the water, creating a toxic environment for shellfish and wildlife. Developing mollusks cannot form their shells and die off. The chemicals used in some pesticides, the insect growth regulators, will stop the development of young lobsters and cause their death. The very diversity of our state means that one size doesn't fit all. I've given you also a sheet of information about Harpswell's ordinance. And I want to stress that it was a collaborative effort. There was the awareness that lobsters were being harmed by pesticide use and fertilizer use, so the town working with fishermen, lobstermen, set this ordinance in place in 2004. And others behind me can speak more about it. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for the Representative? Representative Bryant?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Cumming. I was wondering if the comments that maybe your town didn't have enough expertise to make these decisions, how do you counter that?
Well, the Chair of the Conservation Committee is here and I think can describe the process for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Pickett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last large paragraph in your testimony, did that information, was that derived from a study or how did that information, in other words, can you verify how that information came forth?
Well, again, I'll defer to the conservation chair, but I would say absolutely there are studies of what affects clams, the development of shells. We know that acidification causes damage as well as predation. And lobsters, certainly there's great scientific evidence for what harms and helps. Thank you.
Representative Hardwick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe afternoon.
Not quite. Yeah.
Getting close. My question, I guess, sort of on Representative Bryant's is that I see in the Harpswell ordinance there's a waiver provision, and I was just wondering, maybe it's for somebody else to answer, but my question would be, what is the background of, and how does that waiver, and what is the background of the people that grant that waiver?
Yeah. I will defer, but I think it's very important to note that there is a waiver so that there is flexibility.
Others? Anyone? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Speaking in opposition, Senator Carson. Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Davis. Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Brownie Carson. I represent the five towns in District 24, Harpswell, which is my hometown, Brunswick, Freeport, North Yarmouth, and Pownall. I am here to express my concerns about the bill that would preempt the ability of these towns to reasonably regulate the use of pesticides. I was not aware of the bill until this past Friday when I received an email from the Harpswell Town Administrator, which opened with this sentence, or these couple of sentences. The town wants to go on record in its opposition to LD 1505, which is getting a public hearing on Monday, May 1. Our Conservation Commission has worked diligently to get ordinance language in place that prohibits the use of certain pesticides in Harpswell that have been proven harmful to the marine environment. Over the weekend, I reviewed Harpswell's ordinance. It is a product of hard work by citizens who want to conserve the sensitive natural resources in our coastal community. As I read the language of LD 1505, our town would not be able to take any action to protect aquatic invertebrates or safeguard pollinators. The residents of Harpswell do not want their independence and their local authority to be impaired in this way. I also checked ordinances in other towns in my district. Brunswick has a less comprehensive ordinance than Harpswell, but it does, quote, regulate both pesticides and fertilizers used in town. The provision related to pesticides may, in fact, be perfectly consistent with the rules promulgated by the Board of Pesticides Control. However, as I read the text of this bill, the town would be left with no ability to enforce its own ordinance. Maine communities have a long and proud history of self-government. While they generally have no objection to the practice of state governments setting minimum standards for guiding local decision-making on certain issues, preemption is another matter. I urge the committee not to preempt the ability of towns in my district and across our state from regulating pesticides for legitimate local purposes. I have attached to my testimony brief excerpts of the relevant ordinances from the towns of Harpswell and Brunswick for your review, and will be glad to answer any questions you may have or forward them to representatives of town governments in my district for their responses. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to this bill, and I will endeavor to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator. Questions? Representative Beebe, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, basically, the town ordinances are making are passing ordinances and enforcing those ordinances that are more stringent than state law. Is that true?
I believe that to be. Brunswick is probably, as I noted in my testimony, I think it's brief and I think it's consistent with state law. In Harpswell, where we have lots of wetlands, we have lots of small brooks and streams that oftentimes empty into shallow bays, a lot of shallow water in the bays and inlets, lots of wetlands and shallow areas that are nursery for all kinds of shellfish and finfish as well. We've got a lot of sensitive territory, and I think that the fishermen and others in the community who have looked at the evidence suggesting impacts from pesticides on developing mollusks and invertebrates have decided they want a more stringent set of pesticide controls.
Go ahead, Representative.
So in effect, it's offering more protection.
I believe that to be the case, yes. And I think you will hear from our Conservation Commission Chair and at least one or two other people from town here today.
Thank you.
Others? Anyone else? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other legislators who wish to speak in opposition to this? Seeing none, anyone wishing to speak in opposition from the audience? Anyone? Come right up, sir.
Left of it, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, esteemed members of the committee. I'm Dr. Jim Meyer, a retired psychiatrist living in Falmouth now, and I'm chair of the Physicians for Social Responsibility Toxics Committee. So I'm well versed on a lot of the scientific issues. As a long-term resident of Scarborough, I assisted in drafting the ordinance there, and I was present at some of the hearings for the South Portland ordinance. I didn't perceive these to be hysterical or emotionally biased hearings. There was a lot of diligent research, a variety of testimony, and so forth. And I think what they've come up with are reasonable kinds of protections. For example, in Scarborough, there, if there's a horrendous plague of locusts, the town manager can elect to use more toxic pesticides if really needed, probably with brown-tailed moth. You know, there may be a similar kind of problem. I worry that with any kind of pesticides or toxic substances, lead, mercury, so forth, the more research accumulates, the more we lower what are considered safe levels of these things. And it's particularly of concern that when they're used indiscriminately by people who are not carefully licensed, and I understand the licensed people, you know, have a strong interest in doing it right, we have to worry about the runoff. Have to worry about children. I'm a grandfather of eight, so I guess if I have a bias, it's in protecting children. I have four grandchildren in Norway. I don't worry about them. They have preemptive safety laws that say if there's any correlation with adverse risks, they don't let the product on the market. We may get there eventually. Canada got there. But the thing with children is that they are much more likely to roll on the lawns, put things in their mouth, especially little kids, and it's a greater risk to them. They accumulate those things over a long period of time. Some of the safety testing for drugs and pesticides, herbicides, is fairly short-term, but if you really look at long-term, there may be endocrine-disrupting effects that cause later reproductive abnormalities and so forth. So there's a robust literature that suggests, you know, there's a lot that we need to know. I think, you know, people who are passing local ordinances ought to be working with the state. It's not an us against them kind of thing, so I hope that there will be more cooperation. But I agree with Senator Brownie Carson that there's no guarantee that whatever state-level actions happen to preempt citizen initiatives, we don't know that these are going to better protect environmental and public health. So I'm concerned about such preemption. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Anyone have a question? Representative Bryant.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. And what say to you, do you set up these ordinance in Scarborough, let's say, and the feeling of others is that you really don't have the expertise or the towns don't have expertise to order to go beyond the scope of the state's laws?
No, there were experts who testified there. I think to assume that nobody else except at the state level has the expertise sells other professionals short. Part of the mission of Physicians for Social Responsibility is to try to rely on science rather than emotion.
Go ahead.
And do you feel that out of state and out of town sources are influencing you to make you make those decisions?
Well, if they're experts from a well-recognized pesticide or other kind of regulating agency, you know, their testimony may help. I realize we're sensitive. We're all sensitive to outside people kind of putting their thumb on the scales. But if these are reliable outside experts, you know, we should be relying on them, and we should be relying more on the expertise of the state. So I don't see it as an either-or process.
Others? Anyone else? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Others who wish to speak in opposition to this legislation?
Good morning. I am Mary Ann Naif, and I would like to make testimony in opposition to LD 1505. If you can't hear me, let me know. I'm sorry, this is my first time doing this. Senator Davis, Representative Martin, distinguished members of the State and Local Governance Committee. As I mentioned, I'm Mary Ann Naif, and since 2002 have served as chair of the Conservation Commission in the town of Harpswell. As was mentioned earlier, we are a town with 216 miles of ocean shoreline and the longest coastline of any Maine municipality. I come to speak on behalf of the commission and the town in opposition to LD 1505 and in support of local control. As we have mentioned earlier, Maine is a large, diverse state. And as a coastal marine community, many of our problems are similar to others in the state. However, others are unique to an island community and call for different solutions. Fishing for many different species is a major and vital part of Harpswell's economy, over 50%, with an impact on both its residents and the many tourists who visit the area. For example, during the last major outbreak of brown-tailed moth, town-wide annual spraying was done as a control measure. It was the lobstermen who first observed an increase in dead lobsters after a season or two of spraying. As they examined the lobsters, they noticed they didn't show signs of dying from fright or disease, which is what is normally observed. Upon investigation and testing, it was determined that the pesticide being sprayed, dimolin, classified as an insect growth regulator, worked by altering an insect's ability to molt or form a shell, causing death. And as we all know, living in Maine, lobsters are insects. When the material safety data sheet was reviewed, it was stated that dimolin was safe for fish, but was extremely toxic to juvenile crustaceans, lobsters, and crabs. Through the work of the lobstermen and the community, spraying was defunded at town meeting that year, and Harpswell passed the Insect Growth Regulator and Pesticide Control Ordinance a year later in 2004, 4 years before state policy was changed to include regulation on the use and application methods of these pesticides in the proximity of marine waters. We concur that pesticides and their use is complex. The Board of Pesticide Control is available to answer questions as they arise, and we applaud its efforts, actually, to have the regulations and the town ordinances readily available online for review by an applicator before they go to visit a site. However, in the case of brown-tailed moth control, the time necessary for changes to be enacted statewide could have been detrimental to Harpswell's marine economy. In Harpswell, there is a focus on developing an awareness of the hazards of pesticide use on the marine environment. The intent of the ordinance language is to eliminate use by homeowners and landscapers certain pesticides proven harmful to aquatic life and encouraged them to contact a licensed applicator for larger scale problems. Waivers are offered to licensed applicators for serious threat to human health or major property damage. Without authority to enforce our current ordinance language, our marine environment is at serious risk from degradation, and we urge you not to support the passage of 1505. I thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Anyone? Representative Ardway.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Your first time, I'm just reading the Hopswell Ordinance.
Yes.
It says the waiver provision, in certain instances, waivers could be granted.
Yes.
And I'm looking for who would
grant
that.
How does it work?
Huh?
I can let you know how it works.
I would like to know who grants the waivers and what are their qualifications.
The way the process has worked, and we've had the opportunity since last year because of the outbreak of brown-tail moth, is a licensed applicator will come to the town and will file an application for a hearing. He provides information as to what he's going to be using, why he's using, and the reason. He then comes to a public hearing, which is the Conservation Commission hears. We listen to testimony, and based on what he, through his expertise, advises, because these are for serious health problems, the waiver would be granted. Now, what happens when there would be a problem? We realize that we can only go to the state when it is something that as restrictive as the state, and anything over that, it is the town's responsibility to carry that out. We have a policy in effect that would then go to the selectman, who then would have the power to, we would have to call somebody of more expertise than we have. I'm not sure if that's really complete, but that is sort of how the process has worked. And we have had very positive results with the pesticide applicators that we have dealt with as far as working out the situations.
Others? Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Who else would like to speak in opposition to this? Come right up, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My name's Donna Herzig, and I'm a Portland resident. And I happen to be one of those pesky environmentalists that part of this law is put forth because of the impact that we have had on a local municipal level. I am part of the group called the Portland Protectors. We are also we have members on the task force that are also trying to work on an ordinance that was supposed to be based on South Portland's ordinance. Instead, it has been dragged out for months and months by the people who are the industry supporters, just basically arguing back and forth with no final determination. I resent very much the fact that many people are standing up saying that this is just a topic based on emotion. This is far deeper, and I would like to tell you guys, everybody, that I have over 100 hours or more of research that I have done myself. I know Henry Jennings personally on the main board of pesticides. I also know LaBelle Hicks, the toxicologist. I'm also a Maine citizen scientist for the Maine Bumblebee Atlas and also the Maine Butterfly Survey. I know many of these people in this audience, and I've talked extensively to people who are the applicators. And this is what I have found. There is a very big worry about the responsibility that we are going to be handing over to the pesticide industry. I have personally seen in my neighborhood, my neighbor was being told consistently that True Green was giving her organic pesticides. And when I kept telling her, you've got an applicator sign out there, let's call and see what that MSDS sheet says. In fact, it was a complete non-organic synthetic pesticide. I have witnessed applicators in my neighborhood applying pesticides when the ground is frozen, which is absolutely not what they are supposed to do. I have witnessed them spraying when we, 2 hours later, have a massive deluge of rain. 60% of all the sewer drains in Portland go right into Casco Bay. I want you to think about this cocktail mix. I also, the reason I got started in this was because one day I was sitting in my home and I had my neighbor, I was spraying pest there. They had a Lucas tree was spraying professionally applicated pesticides that all drifted into my home and onto my front property, where I have an organic garden, which now has been subjected, when I got the MSDS sheets, to a cocktail of insecticides and herbicides that have now contaminated my garden. Immediately, all the bees that I had that were on my bushes in the front yard began dying. I took videotape of that and took that to a master beekeeper who did confirm that the bees were all dying from toxic reasons. I called the Maine Board of Pesticides and Lucas. They both denied that the pesticide drift was causing the bees to die. I guess it just, they suddenly, just out of nowhere, began dying, coincidentally right after the pesticide drift. I have also spent hours and hours talking to Henry Jennings about the way they collect data. I would encourage all of you to take a look at the annual summary report that these applicators are required to submit. And if you want to make heads or tails or try to figure out where they're spraying and how much they are spraying, as my group tried to do, you will see how useless this form is. I also am very surprised at the people that don't, that are continually saying that these ordinances are somehow dangerous. All of you in this group, except with maybe a couple people, have been around before there was pesticides applied to your grass.
Ma'am, I got to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, like I said, I have a unique perspective on this and extensive information.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Beebe Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your name again, and do you have some written testimony?
You know, I didn't. This was, I was actually traveling on Saturday when I got an alert from the Maine MOFCA. None of us were even informed, which is why I'm pretty much a minority here of people that were even told about this meeting. So I just scrambled today because I got home from being out of state. I scrambled this morning, so I don't. I certainly can provide some.
That would be good. And your name again?
Donna Herzig.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Others? Representative, Senator DeChambeau.
Thank you.
Hi.
You'll have a chance to, next time when we meet, is a work session.
Okay.
You got my attention when you used the word emotional, and I want to explain something. I use the word emotional testimony, having to sit and listen to this in my own community. I'll change that to people are passionate about
Thank
what they
you.
Believe,
Thank
both
you.
For and against. And so that's a much better word. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you. Others? Any others? Thank you very much for
Thank you,
your testimony.
Senator.
We will do one more person in opposition, and then we are going to take probably a 25 or 30-minute break. And when we come back, we will return to those who wish to support this legislation.
Good morning, Senator Davis, Representative Martin, and distinguished members of the State and Local Government Committee. My name is Ivy Fernuka, and I'm the Casco Baykeeper with Friends of Casco Bay. Like the woman who testified before me, I just learned about this hearing. So I have prepared written testimony, and it's been submitted by email this morning. And I've also sent a link so that those of you who do want to look at the 27 municipal ordinances that exist can go to that single link and check out those ordinances. My written testimony contains links to studies. I know that was another question that came up. Are there links to studies about some of the impacts? Now, one of the things that you heard about was that federal and state law is enough. And that's not true in this case. For example, since 1995, there's been an eightfold increase in the amount of lawn pesticides applied just in Maine. So that 6 million pounds, over 6 million pounds of pesticides are being applied on Maine lawns. And during the same time, we know that, for example, more bees are dying from the use of neonicotinoids, and they have it's alarming, and we continue to just begin to understand the impacts. And if you read these pesticide labels, none of them are appropriate for use in the marine environment, which is the environment that my organization works to protect. So I'm just going to give you some highlights from my testimony. Between 2001 and 2009, my organization, which uses science, education, and advocacy to do its work to protect and improve the health of Casco Bay, collected rainwater flowing into Casco Bay and analyzed the samples to detect a suite of pesticides. Our lab results identified 10 different pesticides in 14 locations all around Casco Bay, so there was no place that didn't have pesticides in it. In my written testimony, there'll be a chart and a map showing you the locations of these pesticides. This is concerning because pesticides poison us. 9 out of 12 of the most dangerous and persistent chemicals are pesticides. You heard about children and wanting to protect children. Children are the most vulnerable to pesticides. They're exposed to them at homes, schools, and their lawns and gardens. It leads to birth defects, it leads to lower IQs, and it leads to greater risk of cancer, ADHD, and autism. In the surface waters, as you heard from Representative McCrae, it has an impact on shellfish. And especially when it's combined with coastal acidification, it can augment the impacts on them and lead to their demise. I know I'm almost out of time, so what I also want to just say in conclusion is that the 27 ordinances that have been passed are from the northernmost tip of the state to the southernmost tip. They're from rural to urban, and they're all carefully crafted to deal with issues in that specific town. So thank you very much, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Anybody? Thank you very much. Okay, folks, we now will take probably back here by 10 of, perhaps at Matin, that possible.